Hi, everyone. This is Chris Thompson, and I'm here with my good friend, Dr. Mike Mandel. I've known Mike for a long time. I would say at least 15 years now, Mike.
Something like that, yep.
And Mike is an exceptional guy. He is a six-time award-winning hypnotist. I first got to know Mike when I was a first-year university student, and he was doing a stage hypnosis show at my university. But over the years, I've come to know Mike has a whole wide variety of skills that I think you're going to be amazed by. He teaches for NLP Canada at the University of Toronto. And what we're going to talk about today is relationships, specifically how you can improve them. And we wanted to do this because Dr. Mandel appears regularly as Relationship Mike on the CBC television program, The Stephen and Chris Show. So the goal of this recording is to not only be helpful to you, but also to be informal. And at the end, we'll give you a chance to email us to ask questions to Mike directly. So, Mike, good to have you here.
Yo, good to be here, Chris.
So may as well dive right in rather than adding any kind of filler and fluff for everybody. We'll just go into the questions and answers. So Mike's got five great tips for you today on improving your relationship. I think you're going to love them. We'll dive into the first one. The first one I have here on the list, Mike, is to be direct. What do you mean by that?
Well, that's a really important one. Being direct means say what you mean and mean what you say. Nowadays, there is so much fluff being spoken. People imply things, and we run into something that in neurolinguistic programming, NLP, we call mind reading. Now, we cannot read people's minds. The only way we can possibly tell what someone is thinking is to actually ask them. But we run into this sort of thing all the time. Oh, when you look like that, you're thinking about such and such, or you're sitting like that and it means this. I was actually at a dinner at the CN Tower in Toronto many years ago, and the person across the table said to me, "You're holding your arms like that because you're resistant to the conversation." I said, "Actually, I'm holding my arms like this because I have a bad neck, and this stretches out the trapezius muscles and makes it easier for me to sit here all this time." So we can't read people's minds. We got to be direct. We have to say what we mean, let our words be very, very simple. On the other hand, not only can we not read minds, it is futile to expect the other person to read our minds. So you don't want to fall into any of this, "Oh, if you really love me, you'd know what I'm thinking." That's nonsense. Say what you mean. Keep your communication very direct and very simple. Don't beat around the bush. Talk to the person. Make it clear.
So on that, what would you say are some of the signals that someone isn't being direct? And if I'm in a relationship with somebody and I'm having a problem where I sense that there's a lack of direct communication, what can I do?
Well, first thing you're going to hear is dissociation in the speech. You're going to hear things like the person won't say, you know, in answer to a direct question, "Do you want to go to my mother's for dinner?" Instead of saying yes or no, they'll say, "I would say..." So they're not telling you the answer. They're telling you what they would say if they were giving you an answer. All of these are verbal games. They're indirect communication at its worst. So the key with direct communication is to be firm but gentle. Pin people down. Say, "Do you mean such and such?" Get some sort of consensus from the person as to what the words actually mean. In fact, the meaning of a communication is generally the words themselves.
I like that answer. I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, just so ask better questions and pinpoint people
down. Exactly.
Okay, the next one on the list is called Kill the Zombies.
Oh, yes. This is a really important one. You know zombies. Everybody knows zombies. They're in the news a lot because there's so many zombie movies and TV shows and stories out there right now. They're in the zeitgeist. And we know what zombies do. Chris, they do two things. Zombies rise from the grave, and they try to get into your house and kill you. Now, keep those two things in mind, that zombies have an agenda, and it's a bad one. Rise from the grave and kill you and destroy you. That's why in the films and in television, you typically have to hit zombies over the head with baseball bats or shoot them with Remington 870 shotguns to stop them. Zombies, I'm talking about in communication, are arguments that are dead but keep rising from the grave. Now, by that, I mean, let's say a man and his wife or girlfriend have an issue that keeps coming up after they've resolved it. It has now become a zombie. They have buried it, but it keeps rising from the grave again. They are treating it like it is still alive. Now, as long as one person in a couple does not want an argument to be dead and over, it is still alive, and that's legitimate. If people have hurt feelings because of some event or whatever, that's legitimate. It's something that has to be dealt with. However, and it's a big however, if you both agree that an argument is dead, bury it. Once it's buried, you never, ever, ever dig it up again. You don't let it become a zombie. On television the other day, I recommended what they do is make up a little death certificate. I had some printed off for the host. And I said, you carry these in your wallet. And the next time a zombie argument comes up and you both finally say, okay, this is crazy. This is something we're wasting time arguing over. It keeps rising from the grave. You put a date on it. You both sign it. You name what the argument is. And you consider it dead. And you can put your zombie arguments in a little case, like a little coffin, if you want, your death certificates, bury them away somewhere in a drawer. And the rule is, once you have both signed off, you have agreed the body is dead, and you're not going to go digging it up again and letting the corpse become a zombie, because it will try to destroy you.
Okay, that's a great one. Next one on the list is called Don't Drop the Bomb. Tell me, Mike, what do you mean by don't drop the bomb?
Yeah, this could just as well be called, don't push the launch button. It's the same thing. Basically, in any relationship that has gone on for any amount of time, both people learn what the bomb is for the other one. It might be, a word you use or something you refer to in the past, and you know this will enrage the other person, give them a huge dump of adrenaline and cortisol in their system, and the argument will now go crazy and into the ozone. You have the power to drop the bomb, but you also have the power to refrain from dropping the bomb. And here's why you should refrain from dropping the bomb or launching that missile. In communications, it's very, very important to recognize that there are three levels. Level one is just data. You're only talking about facts. And in this particular level, most communication takes place without interference. Level two is beginning to get a bit of an adrenaline trickle, so it's starting to heat up a bit. Emotions are coming in, but that's still completely legitimate because people's feelings have to be validated and understood as well. But when you get to level three, it is a full-on adrenaline dump, and now people are screaming at each other, swearing, and they are not listening anymore. Now, it's very, very hard to get back down from level three. Level two, you can get to level one by slowing down a bit, taking a few breaths, turning it back to data, maybe with a tinge of emotion over it, but not too much. By the time you get to level three, it's crazy. We've all been there. And so we all know intuitively what the bomb is for the other person. What is it that if we say this one thing, we'll do the launch of the nuclear weapons, fire the bomb, and all of a sudden the information has gone out the window and you're arguing on level three, freaking on each other, and nothing of any worth is being accomplished. Although it's tempting, don't launch the missile, don't drop the bomb, keep it on level one or two.
Okay, so if you notice that you're escalating something and you just feel that you've got this temptation to drop the bomb because the other person is just pissing you off so much, what can you do to prevent yourself from taking that next step?
That's when you have to call a timeout, even if the other person doesn't want you to. And you have to physically leave the room a lot of the time, especially for men. Women don't always understand. They see their husband or boyfriend walk out of the room and think he's just dropping the subject or being passive aggressive, and that is not the case. When men get stress chemicals like adrenaline and cortisol in their systems, it actually affects the way they process speech, and they need time to get away to burn the chemicals out of their bloodstream. A bit of exercise will help, and deep breathing helps. Then they can slow back down and come back down to level two, and then eventually level one and begin communicating again. But it's necessary. When you feel that the conversation is going up to level three, one or both of you needs to make the effort to disengage right away and say, I'm not shutting this down. We're just taking a bit of a break. We're going to calm down, and then we will resume. Another example for this, this very thing, Chris, is something I call midnight madness. Midnight madness is stupid arguments that happen in the middle of the night. People can't sleep. It wrecks their sleep. It wrecks their next day. It's pointless and stupid. And so the rule in my house is after 11 p.m., everybody's right. I just refuse to argue anything once 11 p.m. hits. Yep, you're right. You're completely right. Yep. Don't get into late night arguments. Even the Bible says don't let the sun go down on your anger. No kidding. It's crazy time for anybody to argue is at night. So that's another thing to avoid. Don't ramp things up by letting it become night and then getting into it later or picking it up because you go up to the washroom in the middle of the night and your spouse wakes up and says, are you still thinking about that thing? And you say, yeah! And then you drop the bomb and launch and all of a sudden it's crazy land. Stop arguing at a certain time. Pick it up in the morning. It'll still be there for you.
Yeah, I've heard the expression, don't go to bed angry, which I think is a great advice. I wanted to ask you, how long do you need to cool down? So if I'm going to say, hey, honey, I need a timeout here. I don't want to feel like I'm walking away on the conversation. Should I say something more specific like, look, I need 2 minutes to calm down because I want to be able to come back and continue this rationally?
Absolutely. In fact, the best thing to do is to pre-frame it when you're both in a good state, when you're in a good mood. say something like, you know, when we argue sometimes and I kind of walk away, yes, and it drives me crazy. I just want you to know right now, while we're rational and we're not freaking out, it's not something I'm doing to annoy you. I physically need to get away to calm down so I can resume and give your valid points the attention they deserve. So next time I walk away, realize I'm doing that to calm down so I can continue the discussion. Because if I continue it in that state that I'm currently in, level 3 is just going to be bad for everybody.
That's a great way to reframe it. The next question on the list here is, don't fight phantoms. So what is a phantom and how do you avoid fighting it?
A phantom is an argument that is irrelevant. It may not even happen, but it might be a future argument. It might be something that could happen. Deal with real issues. Deal with what's actually on the table in front of you instead of what it reminds you of or what it makes you think could happen next week because of this, and then this might occur. No, deal with real things. Avoid the phantoms. They're a total waste of time. There's a tendency, because men like to have closure with their issues, we like to shut down discussions. When we've finished a point, we want to tie a knot around that box, lock it shut, and move on to the next one. Women instead want to talk about a lot of things as being connected. Their brains tend to, as a generalization, run things differently in that regard. What you're arguing about will remind the woman of something else and something else and something else. And all this stuff to men seems to be coming in out of nowhere. But it isn't. She's not trying to drive you crazy. We just argue and think differently. So we have to make allowances for women coming up with all this other stuff that seems irrelevant to us, and they have to make allowances for the men's need for closure and to move on to another point. Phantoms are stuff that are essentially irrelevant. Stay with the topic at hand. Don't jump into something it reminds you of that happened 2 weeks ago or could possibly happen next year. Stick with what's in front of you.
Mike, that reminds me about an expression of how the brain can't tell the difference between an experience that is real and one that is vividly imagined. Is that something that that you think applies here?
Absolutely. I went out with a girl many, many years ago when I was a young man who was convinced that when she was 4 years old, she used to jump off the roof of their house with an umbrella and float to the ground like a parachute. And I explained to her, first of all, there's no way the umbrella would have held her. And secondly, why would her parents let her climb up on the roof of a two-story house? And even if they did let her, how would she get there? But she was convinced she had done this. To her, the experience was absolutely real. A vividly imagined experience to the brain is just as real as something that actually happens. And for that reason, these phantoms can seem very, very real at the time. But you have to develop the discernment to see what the actual issue is, especially not issues it just reminds you of.
That's a great story. It makes me think about the book, There's No Such Thing as Hypnosis.
Oh, that one, yes.
Yes, everything is hypnosis. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's move on to the fifth topic, which is to ask how questions. And I think you're going to probably tell us not to ask why questions.
You're correct on that, Chris.
So talk about that.
You've clearly paid attention over the years. That's great. Why questions tend to keep us stuck, because in life we have a present state where we are and we have a desired or target state where we want to be. And why questions keep us focused on the present state. They do nothing whatever to move us along. So if we ask questions like, you know, why do things screw up all the time for me? Well, your brain will generate answers. Well, you know, you're not a worthy person, you're no good at anything. And it will generate responses based on your question. Why questions keep you stuck. They do nothing whatever to move you into a process that will solve things and direct you to a target state. How questions, on the other hand, do the opposite. So when you're in an argument with someone and things are starting to heat up, instead of saying, you know, why are you angry with me? Which will give them ammunition to say, are you kidding? What about this and this and this and this? And amplify the state, they'll get even worse. Instead, you say, how can we fix this? Which is much better than, you know, why did things go wrong? Or what's the problem here? How questions are process questions, and how questions will move us towards a better result. How can we fix this? The question I ask myself every single day is, how can I get smarter today and have an absolute blast doing it? Let your brain generate answers for things like that.
I love the topic, because in the Talking to Toddlers blog that I write, I talk a lot about how why questions just create ammunition for defensiveness on the part of a child. So if you say to a
child,
why did you go into the cupboard and grab that snack and make a huge mess? They'll just explain to you how they were hungry and they wanted something to eat. Yeah. Instead, if you just ask, how can we come to a better, you know, agreement on how we can arrange snack time?
Perfectly. Yes. Brilliant.
It works
brilliant.
So much better.
I had some friends who their kids were pretty messed up. And, as the father said to me, oh, we're very big on why in this house. I mean, he was pretty proud of it. And it showed in his kid's behavior because why did you do that? Why? I want to know why. And it's absolutely pointless. It does nothing to move forward. How questions are the powerful questions.
Yeah, I like how you say why keeps you stuck, because when you ask a why question, you get an answer why.
Absolutely you do. Now, let's reverse this for a second. Here's one I run into, and this is really your field more than mine, Chris. You're the parenting expert here. But the whole point of parents who let their kids ask endless why questions. I heard that on a bus, a tour bus when we were traveling. Someone said, the little boy said, where are we going now? Well, we're going to your grandfather's. Why? Well, because we want to see him. Why? Well, because we love him. Why? And now the kid is in control, holding a hoop and getting the adult to jump back and forth through it. And the key, of course, is to throw it back to them. Well, why do you think?
Mm-hmm.
Get them engaged in thinking.
Yeah, either that or distract them.
Distract them. Absolutely.
All right. So that's great. I mean, I hope all of you listeners have appreciated the information Mike has brought forth here. So just to recap, be direct in your communication.
Say what you mean. Mean what you say.
Kill the zombies.
Don't let them rise from the dead. Write up death certificates if you have to. Kill those old arguments. Agree they're dead and bury them.
Don't drop the bomb.
Don't launch those missiles. Don't drop the atomic bomb. You know what'll set the other person off. Resist launching. It won't help anything.
Don't fight the phantoms.
Deal with real arguments. Deal with what's in front of you, not stuff it reminds you of or something that might happen.
And ask how questions.
Because they move you forward towards a process, towards resolution. Why questions keep you stuck.
Very stuck. Okay, thanks very much, Mike. I really appreciated you coming into the studio today to record our question and answer session on relationships. I think it's been extremely useful. If any of you listeners have questions that you want to send to Dr. Mike Mandel, please email the following email address, questions@mikemandelhypnosis.com. That's MikeMandelHypnosis.com. Mike, thanks very much for coming in today.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me here.
And if you want any more information about Dr. Mike Mandel and some of his fantastic self-hypnosis products, please visit MikeMandelHypnosis.com.